It was the ending was a little bit odd, but because Harrison Ford just yells at him and he hands over his shotgun. It's enough. That's enough. What are you gonna do? You gonna kill all of us?
You gonna kill him?
You gonna kill the boy? You gonna kill the boy? And like parades him in front of him. You shoot him! Shoot him right now! He's right here.
Gary McGillis is like, what are you? What are you doing?
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of I Finally Watched. I'm Milan.
And this is David, and today I finally watched Witness.
You witnessed the masterpiece, cinematic masterpiece, that is Witness. When I first watched this movie, it was in a college class, and it was a production design course, I believe. And the thing that stuck out to me in the classroom about this movie was when he hit the birdhouse in the middle of the yard, and our professor paused the movie. She turned to the class and she's like, now class, what does the birdhouse symbolize? Out of all the type of birdhouses, why did they choose this birdhouse to be in the film? And for the life of me, David, years and years, like a decade later, I just think they chose a fucking big birdhouse that a car could like convincingly crash into.
I mean, I guess if you want to say that like him crashing into their world is exemplified in him crashing into this birdhouse that looks like whatever. That's stupid. It doesn't matter.
Like a tiny model of their actual house.
That's not what this movie's about. The movie's not about him hitting it like
The symbology of this could be extraordinary. You don't know.
Dude, Willem Dafoe as John Book, which also is just last name's Book,
yeah,
for some reason. So the last Peter Weir movie that we did was a little movie called Dead Poets Society, which I did not like that much.
I know.
And it is kind of interesting when you look at his other movies, how many of them I love. So Master and Commander, The Way Back, which is like one of Saoirse Ronan's first movies that I saw. It's got Colin Farrell, a bunch of people. I love that movie. And it's kind of a little seen one to me. And then
I haven't seen it. Have you seen the movie The Way, Way Back?
Yeah, I've seen The Way, Way Back. I've seen The Way Back with Ben Affleck. I've seen The Way Back.
Have you seen The Back? What would have been cool would have been if you did not see The Way, Way Back, and we did The Way Back and The Way, Way Back.
Well, we can do The Way Back and The Way Back because I've seen both of those.
Mm.
Have you seen Stella's Gotten Her Groove Back? But the other one that I just saw recently, which sucks that we can't do, is The Truman Show, because watching that as a child and then watching that for the first time, like 15, 20 years later, is quite an experience. So anyway, my point is, I think Dead Poets Society is a little bit of an anomaly in my, like, I love Peter Weir's movies. And The Way Back was in 2010. He has not directed a movie since then, which kind of sucks. Because Witness was awesome. I think
Thank you. I thought you were working up to the point where you're like, just like the Dead Poets Society, I also didn't like Witness.
No, I loved it. I mean, it even starts out with like, it starts out with this beautiful B-roll of the Amish community leading to like a funeral, which I was like, man, that looks so, that's like, that just makes me almost want to join. And then I was like, oh wait, no TV, no fun. Nah, I'm good. But that he makes beautiful movies. This is like a very simplistic story that I was like kind of drawn into the whole time. I think this is, and the Academy backs me up on this, the best acting performance of Harrison Ford's career. I thought he was amazing in it.
I agree with that too. I think, I don't know if you said this or, no, I'm pretty sure you said this, or maybe you were voicing an opinion of someone else that Harrison Ford is not a good actor.
So,
I just want to say, I had that in mind watching this movie, and I was like, you can't say that watching this movie.
I think what it is and there's a lot of actors that do this, and they're like, they're fine actors, they're good actors, but like they sort of play a version of themselves in everything. And I'd say the two movies that of his that I've seen that I think he doesn't just play a version of himself are this and The Fugitive. I think in those movies he's doing like some real acting, whereas like, I don't know, he's kind of a gruff and grumpy guy now. So, I mean, even in Star Wars, it seems like he's playing a little bit more lively than he does now. But I mean, those, yeah. Those
what about just... like, what about like Jack Ryan movies or like Air Force One? I feel like those are like the same character.
Well, Air Force One, he's just, yeah, I mean, he's just President Harrison Ford in Air Force One.
Yeah.
Get off my plane. But this, like, he was so great in this movie. He is playing like such a different character. There's like, there were certain points where like the acting just without saying anything, I thought was amazing.
Yeah.
The other thing I noticed about this movie is this movie had so many people in it that like are then in other stuff that we love. Yeah. So first of all, starting out with Daniel, who's the guy that's hitting on Rachel.
Well, yeah, Danny Glover. I thought you were going to talk about Viggo Mortensen.
Well, Viggo Mortensen is just a small bit part. That's his first role. No, I'm talking about the guy that plays Daniel. His name is Alexander Godunov. He is the main Eastern European bad guy.
Picard!
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So when we're watching the movie, like the first, like through the first like 10 minutes of the movie, it was like, he killed the husband.
Well, actually, you know, the opening of the movie of Rachel and her son going onto the train, and he's looking, you know, way too cool on that horse riding alongside that train. And this is just how good the acting is in the movie, is that he's obviously trying to get with her, and she obviously has absolutely no attraction to him. But also, it's 5 minutes after her husband's funeral.
Right.
So, like...
Also, two of the people went on to be in Mighty Ducks movies.
The little kid?
No. So, Schaefer... who is played by Joseph Sommer, is Mr. Ducksworth.
Oh my God.
And then the grandpa of Samuel, the dad of Rachel, is the guy who owns the skate shop that Gordon Bombay like worked at. Like his.
No.
Yeah.
I just recently watched like all of the Mighty Ducks.
And then did you recognize the little boy?
He was so familiar to me. Who is he?
So he's Lucas Haas, who's been in quite a few things. The last thing that I remember from is he's the guy in Inception who like gets kidnapped like at the very beginning when they do the thing on Ken Watanabe, and he kind of gets captured by Ken Watanabe's men, and he's like, yeah, he was going to sell you out. He's like one of DiCaprio's boys too. He's part of the posse. Him, Toby, DiCaprio, like, but yeah, I mean, he's done a bunch on his own, right? But yeah, so... that's just, I don't know. And then Danny Glover with two lines in the entire fucking movie.
Yeah, but he's like the main antagonist, kind of.
Not really. I think Schaefer is the main antagonist.
No, Schaefer is definitely the main antagonist, but I guess that you would call Danny Glover's character more so the catalyst.
And this doesn't even...
The catalyst antagonist.
And this doesn't even talk about Kelly McGillis, who then goes on to Top Gun, right?
Right.
So this just has so many people in it. And it's just, I think what's great about the movie is, one, it's beautiful because of the direction, the cinematography. Two, I think the story is like simplistic, but also not very predictable in the way it, you know, kind of goes about. There was like a ton of moments where it sort of gives you like this red herring of what you think is going to happen. Like, I know he goes to Amish country, but I was the whole time like, I don't know how this is going to play out. And then at one point he calls Schaefer. He's like, I'm going to come kill you.
Yeah.
And then he sort of doesn't get the chance.
Yeah. One of the problems that I had during my first watch of this movie, which it's kind of funny when you watch something again, even if it's not that long later, it was like, so I've seen this movie 3 times. The first time, 10 years ago, back in college. The second time, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, because I really wanted to show Taylor this movie, and now. And the problem that I had 10 years ago, I still had 5 years ago. And funny enough, watching it now, I was like, actually, I'm okay with it. I don't have a problem with it anymore. It is the unpredictability of it. And I know that sounds kind of weird, but like the, like trying to find the theme of this movie, and then like, how does he solve his issue, which is Danny Glover and Schaefer and everyone, but still going on theme. And I think it actually does it pretty well, except for the fact that I would love to see him take out everyone without using a gun once. Right. Because that was kind of like what they were setting up for, I felt like. But they, you know, he still did it like using the stuff around him, which I thought was pretty good.
But I actually think that sort of leads to the actual ending of the movie, too, though. Right. Because this movie could have like a traditional happy ending where either she comes to live in the city or he decides to become an Amish person.
But I think that's what makes the movie like that much greater.
Is the fact that it doesn't. Yeah, I agree. Thank you for interrupting me to say what I was going to say. But in saying that, the fact that he still uses guns, he still kind of commits to violence, sort of shows he doesn't belong in this world. So I think it naturally leads to the ending that we get.
Just a small town girl.
I don't know. Stop singing.
And so, a city boy.
I think we can start going through this movie. So it starts with Rachel's husband's death. And like I said, I thought Daniel, something was up with him. He even follows them to the train. And she's like, he asks, you know, if she'll be back soon. And she sort of just doesn't answer. But she smiles at the way he treats her son. So it's like, I think it is perfectly acted for, and like the direction of like what you want the story to be and the way it's written is perfect for, we don't know exactly what this is, but in retrospect, it makes sense. Like she's just had her husband die. She's not necessarily interested in this guy right away. Maybe with the death of her husband, she's kind of questioning like her life in general. And so like another Amish guy, you know, maybe that's why she sort of fell for Harrison Ford. So like all that at play, yep. She's not scared of this guy. She doesn't hate him. She's not sure that she knows he wants a relationship. She's like, I'm not really sure if that's what I want.
She doesn't know that this guy is going to go after John McClane in a few years. So
yeah. She would definitely want to bone John McClane too.
Oh my God.
For sure. Yeah. Like that. She's got a type.
Of course.
I want to meet Jacob. So, and then she is off to Baltimore. We never understand why she's going to Baltimore. Like
it's
what
for her
business?
Sister, her sister.
Yeah. But what is she going to do there? Just hang out? Her sister. I wonder if her sister was Amish and like did the, what's that thing called? You remember? It's like, so at 18, when you're on, like when you're Amish,
oh,
when
on
you
a, hit... on a spree.
Rumspringa. I knew it sort of.
Oh, I
that.
Was close. Rumspringa.
Anyway. Yeah. So I wonder if her sister did that. Cause a percentage of Amish people that when they do that, they just don't come back. That's like, they're like, you know what? I like this.
Yeah. Can't blame them there. The thing too, is like, well, they took a train, but that's going against their like way of living. But is that okay? Is there like a certain amount of distance where you're like, horse and buggy? Sorry, God. No, not today.
Maybe it's like steam engine, you know?
You think that train was powered by a steam?
Probably not. No.
Okay. All right.
So they're going to the train. They get to this, they take one train to, I guess, Philly, and then that train is going to then go to Baltimore. But they got a 3-hour layover.
I love how casually that guy was like, this ticket? Yeah, this ticket's on the train. It's 3 hours late, though. And then,
get up. Please leave. Yeah,
please leave. No, like, you just have to be okay with this.
I was also surprised how, like, easily she let her kid just walk off, which is kind of like, in line with her, like, kind of questioning character, like someone who would fall for our Harrison Ford in this. So it sort of makes sense in the end.
Also, you could combat that with saying, because they live in such a peaceful and like, you know, everyone knows each other type of community, him going off like that is probably like an everyday thing. So she's not aware of the dangers around the corners.
Yeah. So the kid goes to the bathroom and then witnesses a murder. I can't remember. Did the guy who gets murdered, did he notice Danny Glover and the other guy? Did he like say what's up to them? I couldn't remember that part.
he sees them walking into the bathroom, right? Because, like, how couldn't you? Because he passes him through the mirror and he uses the urinal. Real quick, before we get there, I want to talk about how the little boy notices another older man with a beard and a hat. And he's like, oh my God, another Amish guy, just like me. He walks up to him and it's a Jewish man.
Yeah, like a Hasidic Jewish person.
It's a Hasidic Jew. And I know, I love how you know this, because he's holding a newspaper that says the Jerusalem Times.
Just in case you don't get the joke. They're like, what if people don't get this joke? We have to really spell. I didn't even notice that because, like, I got what they were doing, obviously. Different hats. So I guess Peter Weir said that this was kind of like the most gruesome scene he's ever filmed. And he wasn't sure, like, if he should, which I don't know. It doesn't look that.
Can I explain? Let me ask you something.
30, 40 years later, it doesn't look that great.
It doesn't. If you're going to kill a guy and he's a cop and you're a cop and this is a public restroom, would you just go up behind him, knife him and leave? Or would you, like, spend the time to cut his throat and then check every stall with the security of not thinking no one's going to come in here?
Yeah, we also really don't ever get an explanation of why. I mean, I guess it's because of the drugs, and I guess maybe this guy started to suspect them, or maybe this guy was in on it and he's starting to grow a conscience, but never really an explanation of what exactly was going down there.
The other cop that was in the bathroom that helped Glover kill the guy, was that McPhee?
No, McPhee is Danny Glover.
Oh, no. I meant, oh my God, what's his name? McAfee?
No. Well, McPhee is Danny Glover. McAfee is pretty close to that.
Yeah, it wouldn't name him McAfee. The other guy who ended up in the barn at the end of the movie.
I don't think it is Fergie. I don't think it his Fergie. Name his name doesn't matter. His name in real life is Angus McInnes.
No, it doesn't matter. Was it Fergie in the bathroom in the beginning?
Yeah, it had to be. We never see his face, but it had to be him. And also, he's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm washing the blood off my hands. Like, why are you asking stupid questions? Like, and he's like, we got to get out of here. He's like, you're on the ground. Like, why are you giving me shit? I'm washing my hands. And then he starts kicking in the doors, and there's a little nod to Indiana Jones when the kid rolls underneath and then grabs his hat, like, and pulls it back underneath. I was like,
oh, yeah.
I was like, that's very, like, worldly and smart of that kid to, like, lock the door and then to know to climb under the other and then to jump up onto the toilet.
Did you see, though, he didn't quite know how to lock the door at first?
Well, it seemed like it was kind of broken. Like, this is a public bathroom. He kind of knew what he was doing, but he couldn't get it to work.
I took it like he's never, like, come across a lock like that before, so he didn't know if you went up or down or across.
And no doors when they shit at home. So I also think this movie does a good job of, like, they keep this kid's very good. He's not, like, just going to be like, oh, all black people look alike. He's like, no, I remember what the guy looked like. I'm not just going to say it's any old guy. Because you have the scene where Harrison Ford, first of all, he's like, oh, he's not a runt like your partner. And the partner's like, what the fuck, man? But then Harrison Ford just goes to a random bar and grabs a black guy. He's like, is this it? And he's like, no, that's not him.
Well, I'm sure it's like a Usual Suspect sort of deal.
What do you mean?
Like, he knows that he had to be in the area, right? So it's not like they went to a bar very far off from the train station. It's probably like a local thing, and they were probably like known assailants or whatnot.
I just, like, afterwards, he's like, oh, man, it's just an honest mistake. And the guy just smiles and laughs at him. I'm like, oh, yeah, just police brutality.
Yeah, it's only funny when Harrison Ford does it, and it's the 80s.
So then he has him stay with his sister, and he just, as a savage, just grabs the milk carton, as everyone did in the 80s, drinks straight out of it, and just hands it to her while walking out. Just disgusting.
You can't just come in here and pretend to be the dad to my kids.
Shit. That's what she said through Rachel. But she's like, yeah, I got a guy over. And she's like, are your sons here too? She's like, yeah, what are you, their father? It's pretty funny stuff. And then the next day he takes the boy in to do the lineup. And this whole time, like, I will say the one thing that's telegraphed is, like, I knew Danny Glover was a cop.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just, I don't know if you've watched a bunch of 80 cop movies, but the gun that he pulls when he goes to check the stalls is such a cop gun. And the way he holds it too, such a cop way.
Yeah, but I do love the reveal. I think this is actually pretty brilliant, the way he sees the newspaper and he's kind of looking like weird, and Harrison Ford sort of notices and comes over there and he just points at it.
Dude, that hand to put his pointer finger down. God.
It was so good. And then, so he goes to his boss, and I think in a lesser movie, it like the reveal is going to be later on that the boss is in on it, but this one is immediate. Like, he goes to his boss, he's like, dude, this guy's in on it. He's like he's on vacation in Florida, which is bullshit. And his boss is like, all right, we need to protect that kid. And then immediately McPhee comes to try and kill him, gets a shot, hits him. And we know Harrison Ford knows, everyone knows, the boss told McPhee he's in on it. And so we gotta go hide.
The, how worried were you when his partner, like, he looked at the address? So that's another thing about this movie that doesn't spell out. Book asks his partner, burn everything that has to do with the Rachel and Samuel?
Yeah.
Case. And he does, but not before like taking a peek at the address. I knew that either, like when I first saw this, I knew that either his partner was going to die or be tortured and then killed, probably. Do you think they knew where he was because they got it out of his partner? Or do you think it was because he punched the tourist in Amish Town?
I think the movie leaves it a little bit open to interpretation, but I would say it's the punching that probably... That's like... Because they then show the guy tell the cop, this is the same cop who Schaefer called and was like, hey, we're on the lookout for this guy.
Was it the same cop?
Yeah, it was. He's like, looking for someone with the last name Lapp. And then the guy's like, yeah, he was with... Eli Lapp, and the cop looks forward almost like at the camera like, oh, that's gotta be it. This has gotta be the guy.
So it was that his partner didn't give him up. I like to think that
his partner just died off screen, like pretty horribly, I would imagine. He's just killing people. And so he leaves, tells his sister, you don't know where I've gone, tells his partner, watches back, that delete everything, burn everything. And the next day we see Schaefer and Glover search the car, question the sister. Sister tells them to fuck off. And they're like, oh, she doesn't know anything. And this is an interesting part of the movie too, where he's like, yeah, I can't stay. I'm just dropping you guys off, which seems like a poor decision.
Where's he going to go?
Yeah, where's he going to go for sure? And then like, don't you want to protect these people? Like, this is your star witness. But you're like, I'll just leave him here. I mean, I guess he figured they'd be all right. They wouldn't be able to find him, but he didn't. I mean, was he? He knows a lot about Amish people, too. He knows the whole Lapp is a common last name thing.
I don't know. I mean, if you were Schaefer or Glover, are you worried at that point? Like, who are the Amish going to tell?
And I guess if you kill the partner and you kill what's his name, that's really the only. But, in this situation, $50 million or whatever it's take, $5 million, you cover your tracks. You kill that little kid.
I know the price for you now. So he crashes into the birdhouse, and here's where the movie, the movie slows down quite a bit. Like, the movie is pretty fast paced up to this point. The movie slows down extraordinary.
It becomes a Romeo and Juliet story at this point, basically. Fish out of water and like a star-crossed lovers.
Mixed with like a Nightingale syndrome, where it's like she's taking care of him, but then slowly falling in love with him across the 2 days it takes for him to be like, okay. One of my favorite moments of the movie, this is jumping ahead just a little bit, but I got to call it out. One of my favorite moments of the movie is when he goes to raise the barn and what's his name?
Daniel.
Puts his hand on his shoulder and he goes, how you feeling? He goes, doing good. I'm doing good, he says. He goes, good.
Yeah,
you can leave. You can leave soon.
Get the fuck out of here. Yeah. It's very funny. She's like, it does kind of, we see her taking care of him as he's like the cursing in his sleep thing. And then right after this, the sheriff gets a call from Schaefer, and Schaefer's like, can you try and find out who this is? And he's like, well, they don't have any phones. I can't call them, so I don't know who Rachel is. Lapp's a common name.
Yeah. I love it how he says it too. He's like, yeah, I'll put out a few calls. If they had phones.
And then all the elders come to visit Harrison Ford. And one of them makes the joke, like, yeah, we didn't know. Oh, I think it's the dad, Rachel's dad. We didn't know what we'd do with you if you died. We didn't know what we'd do with the body.
Harrison Ford is like, okay, that's fair. Yeah, but you're right. I mean, Harrison Ford says so much with his eyes, and it's never overacting either. It's not like he's looking at Rachel, like, actively falling in love. Like, everything is done in a really subtle manner, I think. Of course, there's like a build up to their love affair, but I think everything is done really well. The little kid finds the gun.
Yep. Yeah. And Harrison Ford yells at him, and then he's like, all right, let me take the bullets out and you can play with it. But then Rachel immediately sees and he's like, ah, shit. She's like, you brought this into my house. He's like, you're right. You know, here's the gun.
So they're setting up this gun, right? They're setting up this gun throughout the whole fucking movie. I'm so mad at this. This is another issue I have. They set up the gun. He tells Rachel to hide it somewhere. You know where the hiding spot is. You know where they put the bullets. He gets the gun, gets the bullets, puts it back into the hiding spot. Wants the audience to know, really know where everything is at this point.
Chekhov's gun.
Never comes into play again. And not only that, but you have the little boy running back into the house. And I'm thinking, oh, he's going to shoot him. Did you think that?
I thought the gun was going to come to play. I kind of like that they did that. It almost felt like they were like, fuck the convention of if there's a gun, the gun's going to be used.
Yeah.
Like it seems purposeful that they're like, we're not using that gun because he used a different gun.
Although, speaking of Chekhov's gun, you have where Samuel is showing John around the farm and go into the mill. He's like, what's up there? It's like corn. And then, of course, the millet comes into play later on.
Yeah, well, Chekhov's corn. That's also a thing.
Chekhov's corn?
I was about to call it Schrodinger's gun earlier.
Schrodinger's gun. Is there a gun in the cabinet or not? If you never open the cabinet.
Does it have bullets or does it not? If you don't pull the pin, you won't know. And then there's this conversation from the grandpa to Samuel about we don't kill people. And Samuel's like, well, I would only kill a bad man. And then he's like, well, you would then be one. It is sort of this, the movie does a great job of like, oh, it's maybe setting up that Samuel and the mom might leave with Harrison Ford. You know, that's like what might happen here. Yeah. And then she gives her husband's clothes to him and he comes out wearing it. And it's funny. She has this line, which there's a note on it too. That she's like, yeah, we don't wear buttons because they're showy. And then all the men have buttons. Harrison Ford's shirt has buttons. Like there's buttons everywhere on these shirts.
No buttons, but we got a cool hat.
Stop singing. So he then calls his partner and he's like, it's too hot. You can't come in. You're not going to be able to get near Schaefer. I feel like this movie had a lot of scenes cut, like a lot of stuff happening back in Philadelphia that we didn't get to see. And they just like focus on our movie because this is a tight under 2 hour movie. You know what I mean?
I don't know what they would have. I mean, like
just more Schaefer
scenes. Dying. Yeah.
I think more Schaefer scenes, more Danny Glover scenes. Like why? I don't have a, you know, a time chronology of Danny Glover's like movies right off the top of my head right now. But like, I would imagine he would have had a little bit more to do in this.
Maybe like Lethal Weapon was around this time.
Well, no, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it could have been.
A little after this, actually. Lethal Weapon was 87. So that was after this. But it's still just like, it felt like there could have been a little bit more like with them, with him. Damn, Danny Glover's in like Bruce Willis territory. He's doing like 7 movies a year.
I was surprised that it was Danny Glover, right? Being like, oh, they don't usually put him in a villain role.
Yeah, this is kind of the one of the bigger things he had done up until this point. And then right after Witness, Silverado, The Color Purple, Lethal Weapon, Mandela, which is a TV movie where he plays Nelson Mandela. And then, so yeah, this is, I guess, more of a big break for him, but I still feel like, not a big break, but just, you know, like kind of keeping the career on the right trajectory.
Do you feel like if this was like maybe made 10 years later or 8 years later, the Schaefer role would have been like Gene Hackman?
not even 10 years later, like right now, like right when this, I literally was like, oh, could you not get Gene Hackman to play that? They even look similar.
Yeah. Yeah. He's playing the same character as he did in The Firm, basically.
Gene Hackman doesn't give up at the very end, though. Gene Hackman either, like, what I kind of expected to happen
was him to kill himself.
Yes. Yes. That's what I expected, him to have an ankle gun and him just to kill himself. Yeah. It was, the ending was a little bit odd, but because Harrison Ford just yells at him and he hands over his shotgun. It's enough. That's enough. What are you going to do? You going to kill all of us?
You going to kill him?
You going to kill the boy? You going to kill the boy? And like parades him in front of him. You shoot him. Shoot him right now. He's right here.
Gary McGillis is like, what are you doing?
Why'd you do it that way? It's so weird.
Yeah. It's like, I can't go to the city with you after that.
Yeah. So then after this, we're now at the point where it's just Amish montage. You know, he's hanging out with the boy. He has breakfast with them in like the fucking middle of the night.
At 4 in the morning, milking cows, Jebediah's in the fields and Ezekiel plows.
What are you doing? What is this? What is happening?
You've never heard of Amish Paradise by Weird Al Yankovic? Oh
my fucking goodness. No, yeah, I'm not a Weird Al guy. I don't just listen to it all the time. So after this, you know, Daniel comes over courting and like fucking Harrison Ford's just like, I don't even know what to do. Like he's like just like staring awkwardly at the house and then just like just walks away. There's this funny line too where he starts fixing the birdhouse and she's like, oh, you know carpentry. And it's like Harrison Ford was a carpenter.
Yeah. Like a really good carpenter. Yeah.
Yeah. Before he became an actor. And then the tension is so palpable all of this time. And then the What a Wonderful World scene where they dance and they get caught. And then after this...
What a Wonderful World.
Yeah, that's the song that they're... What a Wonderful World Would It Be? Not What a Wonderful... Not...
Oh. You know. I see trees!
Yeah. Yeah, a little different. But what's funny is, so the dad after this, Eli, is like, you know, everyone's talking that you're going to get shunned. And I was like, what has she done up to this point? Like, besides the dancing, which only you know about... Why are all the elders like, she's going to get shunned just because she brought this guy here who's like protecting her son from death?
I love it too that after this scene and the great line delivery from her where she was like, you shame yourself or whatever she said. And
she's just sprung though. She just needs it.
She's
what's happening there.
Well, yeah. So after that, she was like, you know, fuck it, whatever. I'm sure she doesn't say that, but she's like, you know what?
Freak it.
I'm frick it, man. I'm going to show him my boobs.
Well, we'll get to that. So they question the partner and they're like, you know, we're a cult too, just like the Amish. And he broke the rules as you're breaking the rules now. And that's the last we see of the partner. I don't know if they filmed a death scene or they're just like, oh, we don't have time. And then next is the barn raising. And I do like that Daniel and Harrison Ford were working together so well, you know?
Yeah, it's like he's like he was earning his respect.
Yeah, and then fucking Viggo Mortensen just there. This is his first role.
Not a single line.
Doesn't say it. Says a lot with the eyes, though. A lot with the laughter, with the smiles. And they're like, everyone is watching her serve like a drink to Harrison Ford. Like, oh, did you see the way that whore poured that for him?
I think it's because she poured it for him first before she did her, like, dad.
Dad's at a different table. There's tons of women around just pouring drinks for the menfolk, you know what I mean? Like, she doesn't have to give it to her dad first, you know?
I was... So when they were raising the barn, and he was like, Daniel gets a drink, he gives it to Harrison Ford, and I was like, Daniel just spit in that drink? But no, it's actually like a really nice scene. Like everything is really nice with them. And I guess they have to be because they're Amish. Like they don't have a violent nature. Like they can't because of the rules, right? So like Daniel is forced to just be as amicable as possible.
Yeah. And then after this, he sees her through the window and he goes in the house and watches her bathe. She doesn't seem to mind that much. And then he sort of looks down in like almost shame of like what he's doing.
So I think he looks down because he's like, oh, shit, sorry. But then she just full frontal, like just
just doesn't move, doesn't say anything. And he slowly looks up like, oh, it's okay. You like it?
I don't agree that that's exactly it. Did he pull his pants off? What do you mean?
No, quite the opposite. So he like goes away and she's, I guess she's now like, oh shit, I shouldn't have done that. But then he comes to her in the chicken coop later on or the next morning. And he's like, hey, if we fucked, like it would be way more problematic.
That's not, he said, if we made love, I'd either have to stay or you'd have to leave with me.
I was paraphrasing.
Yeah. Well, then after this, he goes back into town to make another call. And this lady's like, I want to take a photo of you. And he's like, I'm going to strangle you with your brassiere if you take a photo of me. And she's like, what? I've never heard them talk like that. And then he finds out that his partner's dead. So then he calls Schaefer and he's like, I'm coming for you. And Schaefer actually does look worried. And that that version of the movie would have been kind of cool if he just fucking hunts these guys down. Sort of like a Roadhouse type where he just...
What's that farming tool that's like a hook, like a bladed hook?
Sickle?
Sickle? Dude, what if he lost his gun? He didn't have a gun, all right? He has to go hunt Schaefer down, and he arms himself with like two sickles.
I don't think you can use two sickles that way.
Although I thought it was real cool, right? How he calls his house, the wife picks up, which we only like very briefly see her earlier. He's like at a barbecue. He has like a kiss the chef apron on, right?
Yeah.
And then he looks out through the window, and I'm guess there's a young girl. I'm guessing it's like his daughter, probably.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. Like a version of Harrison Ford boogeymanning it into his house full of his family would be like sick movie.
It's also funny because Schaefer's like, smart move calling me at the home where I can't trace it. I was like, dude, it looks like it's a Saturday. Where else would he call? He's gonna call the office and you're not gonna be there because you're barbecuing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yep.
So then after that, he's they're trying to go home and these cars are parked in the way and these dudes are fucking with the Amish people. And Eli's like, Don't get out. It's not our way. And he's like, it's my fucking way. And I was like, yes, beat this dude's ass.
Yes.
And if you notice, after he beats the dude's ass, Vigo in the background's like, yeah.
I did notice. I did.
Vigo must be 16, 17, and he's about to go on his rumspringa, and he ain't coming back. Vigo is about to go ham on the world.
So I don't know about, like, I think you could look at Daniel. Definitely not Eli, but you could look at Daniel, and Daniel is kind of like, fuck yeah.
It's like a begrudging, like, thank you for kicking that. I couldn't do it, but thank you for kicking that guy. Breaking that dude's nose, probably.
Dude, holy crap. He went ham. Yeah, it was awesome.
So next, she's kind of looking outside as Harrison Ford's putting up the birdhouse again. And then she sees this toy that Harrison Ford made for her son. And she's like, all right, go to bed. Take the toy if you want, go to bed. And then just out in the middle of the field, just starts making out. I don't know if it led to sex. I would assume
it couldn't have. It couldn't have. First of all, that's shunning behavior. Okay.
She didn't seem to care, honestly. I think the kissing was shunning behavior enough.
That kissing was pretty hot and heavy.
Intense.
I don't think it led to sex because it almost seemed like the very next moment they did kind of like the Searchers shot with like Glover, Schaefer, and god damn it, what's his name?
Fergie.
Yes, the singer of Black Eyed Peas. So Fergie, Glover, and Schaefer all walk up the hill. It seemed like it was just moments after that kiss.
Wasn't very Fergalicious, you know, buried in corn. But I don't think it could be because, like, when they showed up and walked up, like, Harrison Ford's out in the barn. It's, like, daytime. That was at dusk. So this is definitely, like, the next day that they showed up. So it's a weird cut. I would imagine because he, you know, in the movie he says, if we had sex, you'd have to leave or I'd have to stay. that they didn't, it didn't go to sex, but I mean, it could have, like, there's nothing, you know, nothing that says it didn't.
It could have. And then the reason that he had to leave is because he,
she's pregnant and he don't do kids.
Yeah. No, it's either because he can't stay because he killed someone like in front of them, or she can't go because he killed someone in front of them.
I mean, I don't know. I think there's a variety of reasons why she was like, no, we can't. This isn't going to work. I think she actually was.
She wants to, actually.
Yeah, yeah. She was okay with it. He was like, eh, I don't know about all this. So, yeah, the cops show up.
And he's like, here, you're like a 10. But Philly, Amish 10 is like a Philly 6, okay?
Very well done. I love the camera shot of the road just as the car like drives up, like, you know what's gonna happen, and they drive up over the hump and then they back up sort of to hide. I don't know why they expect, like, they're like, oh, Harrison Ford's gonna be ready for us. Harrison Ford could not have been less ready for them.
Yeah, I kind of love the layout too, because now we've spent time with these people, we know their house in relativity to the barn. And then we know that, like, little hatch that Eli pops into is, like, the cows are down below. So we know the ins and outs of this whole place. But I love how they're separated, right? Rachel and her dad are in the house. The boy and Harrison Ford are in the barn. And then they're not really quiet about it at all. The only thing I didn't see coming, I just didn't notice this, is how far away the Lapp house is from everyone else.
Yeah, it's pretty far. It seems like they got a lot of room to rumble. So they bust into Rachel's house and Eli warns Harrison Ford, and then I kind of love this, like, the way it's sort of set up. He sort of hides up in the silo in, like, sort of a part of it, and then the guy looks up there, but because of the shadows can't see him, and then goes in the silo, and then
awesome.
Dude, death by corn is no joke.
It could have been really dumb. It could have been really cheesy. But the way the guy was actively suffering to breathe, it was so convincing that this guy died this way.
Yeah, because, like, the dust and then the corn was so... I mean, like, I've heard that, like, if you, for example, fell into corn from, like, the top of a silo, it's like you're, unless someone else is there to get you immediately, like, you're fucked. Like, it, because, yeah, it buries around you. So that guy dies, and then Harrison Ford just dives in looking for the shotgun and then finds it immediately as Glover's like running back and forth, like, I think he's in here. I can't see him. I hear Fergie. I don't know what's happening. And then comes in there just to get blasted in the chest.
Yeah.
Then Schaefer uses Rachel as a shield, and them yelling at each other, put the gun down, you put the gun down, oh, put the gun down, oh, the gun's down, is very funny. And then the Amish show up because the boy has rang the bell. The grandfather told him, ring the bell. They all show up, and this is the scene we already talked about. You're going to kill all of us? You're going to kill him? You're going to kill him? How many people are you going to kill, Schaefer? Give up!
In the end, David, they were all witness.
So then after Schaefer gives himself up, the cops come, and then Rachel looks out at Harrison Ford, like, smoking and laughing, which are two things the Amish don't do. So she's just like, ah, he's already gone. And then he sort of goes over to...
Oh, I never thought about it that way, that they have a problem with smoking, and that's what he's doing. Yeah.
And she's just like, ah, he's already gone. And he goes and talks with the boy, and he's like, he says, goodbye, John Book. And then this is funny. So the last scene is him and Rachel just looking at each other and sort of like, will they, won't they? And, you know, she turns away because she's just like, I just can't work. And he walks off. Apparently, there was 10 pages of dialogue between them for this scene. But Harrison Ford got sick, so they just cut it all and had this ending, which I think is probably much better than so much 10 better. Pages of dialogue.
I can't even imagine what they would talk about.
Positions, probably.
I was gonna say, unless if it was 10 pages of sexy dialogue. The best ending of this movie is he's driving off, he passes Daniel, and they just give like a little nod to each other.
Well, except Harrison Ford stops and Daniel just keeps walking. He's like, fuck off, dude. There's also one kind of cool line from the grandpa is be careful out there among the English. Almost saying like, you're not them anymore. You're yeah. one of us, which I thought was a cool, like a cool little
yeah, it
nod
is cool.
to him as he leaves.
Although I don't know if that was ADR'd in or that was shot in and put in later, but Harrison Ford, like John Book, did not react to him.
He gave him like a little smirk, I think.
Kind of. It didn't feel like a genuine reaction to what he said to him, but it was a nice sentiment. I liked it too. So
apparently Burt Reynolds in his biography said that he wanted this lead role and he almost called the director to ask for it, but he backed off. And then Jack Nicholson and Sylvester Stallone were offered the role, turned it down. Kevin Costner.
How could you put Sylvester Stallone in this role? How?
I was going to try and do a bad
impression. Go, do it. Do an impression of Sylvester Stallone as John Book. I'll give you the line. He says, what are you going to do? Kill us? Kill all of us? Kill the kid?
What are you going to do? You going to kill the kid? You going to kill me? You going to kill Rachel? Rachel, how can I be a man if I'm here raising barns? I got to get bad guys. Anyway, I think Jack Nicholson would have been great. Totally different energy.
I don't understand. I don't understand how the coats close. If there's no buttons. Where are the buttons at?
What was it? Who was that?
No one. Anyway, so.
So, and then Kevin Costner, Mel Gibson, Clint Eastwood, and Richard Gere were all considered. I feel like Richard Gere and Harrison Ford could be interchangeable during the 80s. Like, they each could have. Well, I don't see him as Indy. But, like, there's a lot of parts where, like, Richard Gere is probably considered for it. And that is it for the alternate casting. What I did find funny is, so they had some trouble getting a studio to want to take this movie, and they took it to Fox, and Fox said, we don't do rural movies, which I thought was just like a funny line. That it was like, nah, we don't have any of that. And then also apparently no Amish people wanted to appear in this movie, obviously. So there's this line from Rachel in the like the middle of it. She's like, oh yeah, if you want to use the phone, just go to the Mennonites' house, because you know they look like us, but they just, you know, they have, you know, modern technology, whatever. Most of the people in here, the extras that were Amish, were actually Mennonites.
That's pretty cool. Actually, you know what, I was wondering about that, especially during the opening funeral scene. Everyone was so convincingly looking Amish. I was like, They get actual Amish people in here? But I guess, you know, you just have Mennonites also have the beards.
So this movie was, I don't know what I didn't really have expectations where I was like, I'm going to like it or dislike it. I kind of thought it would just be so-so. But like I said, I have a ton of Peter Weir movies that I love. And this movie is just, it's tight. It's perfect. It's paced so well that the whole time I'm just like, I just want to keep going with it, which is funny too, because you're like, oh, this is just like this undercover cop thing where he's hiding out. It's going to be constant worry about getting caught. And like, there's like a huge portion of the movie where that's not it, but it's still so.
It's mostly a rom-com.
Not a comedy.
Okay, not a comedy, but like it's a dramatic romance for the most part.
And it was compelling the whole time.
Exactly. Everyone I've showed this movie to absolutely falls in love with it. I think this is like a movie you want to show a person who, and you want them to like it, but you don't want to be disappointed if they don't like it. Show them this movie, they cannot be disappointed. I just also want to say we should do more Peter Weir movies. I haven't seen Master Commander yet, but the other one, the Dead Poets Society did not have a storybook happy ending. This did not have a storybook happy ending. I think a movie is best when it doesn't. Does most of his movies not?
I don't remember how The Way Back. I kind of remember how Master and Commander is. It sort of has like a satisfying ending. And then The Way Back, I don't remember how it ends. I like think if you're like, oh, if this movie has a happy ending, it's bad. I think it's how you do the ending, how you wrap it up.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying a semi-sweet ending, I think is always more compelling than a perfect happy ending.
Well, I think if the, like I said, in this scenario, it just logically wouldn't make sense for him to give up everything. That's like, that's a rom-com. He gives up everything to be an option. That's a Hallmark movie. So like the fact that this ending makes sense is why it, like, I didn't care whether it was a happy ending or a sad ending. It just made sense as an ending.
Okay, yes. So now you have me thinking, if this was a Hallmark movie, what would the name of this movie be? Like, My Little Amish?
I miss you so much. Thanks for listening to another episode of I Finally Watched. This is David.
And this is Alon.
And I finally watched Witness.